Okay, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Yeah, a little bit more than a minute past the hour, and we begin this Titanic Tuesday broadcast on the horn. It is the fifth day of April 2016. This is the horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you want to jump into the madcap multimedia real-time zany extravaganza that is Horn Chat. Just pick yourself out a screen name and a password. Be reasonably well-behaved. I mean, that means no right-wing nutbags. And you can, you can be part of it all. As so far, folks wandering by, good evening, Soapbox Geezer. Good evening, Labor Man. And good evening to our two longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky. Sparky being a third-stage guild navigator who has... this being spring in Northern California, folded space to become man cave. And yes, 2 days in a row now, the space remains unfolded for the atomic clock here in the studio, which is also awfully, awfully handy. Thank you. Thank you, Sparky. I don't know how glorious the stereo is, Brother Deacon Asa, but, we were in stereo last night, too. It's a technology thing, but hey, last night's 2 hours filling in for Malloy went well, and it was a lot of fun. Some good conversations, some good cussing and discussing, whatnot. And for those of you who have only got one channel, well, this evening you'll have two. Yes, two, because the gizmo, it's different gizmos, okay. Remember back when we had the equipment fundraiser? Yes. One of those gizmos is essential to this process. And so today I ran out and got a new cable, and so we're going to have two channels of audio going into Malloy this evening, which will happen at 9 o'clock. Remember, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Yes. There we go. This week, the program is only 2 hours long because that gives me an hour to turn around, turn everything around and get stuff set up to fill in for Malloy. So, yeah, we'll go from now until 8 p.m. here on the horn, and then an hour, and then we'll do 2 hours, 2 hours, in Malloy's chair, okay, and that's all this week. Thank you very kindly, Tom, letting me know. Mattress King, loud and clear at FYINation.com. Thank you very, very much. Ron, formerly of the squishy thawing north, says, guess where I am today? Blue Sulphur Springs Road over near Smoot. Y'all know where Smoot is, don't you? Sure you do. Yeah. So, Well, say hi to everybody who needs hi said to them there in Smoot, or over there near Smoot, Ron. Well, that's interesting. Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions, tells me some elderly couple fell in a Lincoln County, West Virginia mud hole and were just found alive. That kind of stuff happens around here. Well, of course you have, Gerald. Gerald noting, hey, I've been to Smoot. Well, who hasn't? I've been to Odd. Yes, Smoot, West Virginia. Odd, West Virginia. Clo left for West Virginia, left hand Looneyville, and Gerald's probably been to all of those too. Wow, the Lincoln County couple had been missing since Sunday. They probably have a harrowing tale to tell. So anyway, this is an independent broadcasting effort. We try to keep everything going as best we can. Absent any great big money checks from George Soros, who apparently decided to give all of his money to Hillary instead. Well, I mean, not all of his money, but anyway, I guess George just doesn't believe in progressive broadcasting. More's the pity. But nonetheless, we keep this going without any jokes from Thomas notwithstanding, without any... the mattress ads or buy gold now ads. There's never been a better time to buy gold. Gold is your best hedge against inflation. Buy high and sell low. That's our philosophy here at Buy Gold Now. Operators are standing by to take your call. You're right. No, it's just you. It's just us. And big thanks going out to Michael, a new member of the fraternity of Michael. Michael just signed up for a subscription over at headonradionetwork.com. Thank you very kindly, Michael. It is much appreciated indeed. And we're still pushing to get to that. Eventually we will see Joan in Taliban Deanna's dream come true. And we will see 400 subscribers to the horn. $410 a month subscribers. Right now, we're just working on getting to 100. And quite honestly, I think we're still working on getting to 50. But it is ever so much a help when you do subscribe and you just click the little button. And you know that every month you're going to be part of the process that keeps the horn going. So if you want to do that, yeah, it's over there. It's over there. You just pick out. You put in your amount, and if you want to make it a monthly subscription, you just click that little box, and away you go. But we try to raise a minimum of $200 every evening, and sometimes we raise a maximum of zero. That was the case yesterday. No, we raised 10. Thank you, Glenn. Thank you very kindly. We raised 10 yesterday. Which meant that we would have come in here with a fundraising deficit of $390, but the beaten Swede ponied up, and a couple of subscriptions came in, and then Michael just before airtime. So I can proudly announce that we have only $300 to raise to be even thus far. So 10 at 30, 30 at 10, 1 at 300, 2 at 150, 4 at 75. 8 at 37.50, you get the idea. And that's how we keep independent progressive broadcasting going. Year after year, more than a decade, week after week, month after month. So hopefully that'll be the end of things, and we'll get that all going. Yes, hi, Gerald. I am Bob Kincaid. I thought I took care of that part. Anyway, it is Titanic Tuesday on the horn. That day, of course, is set aside to ponder the impenetrable mysteries of right-wing attempts at intellect. And we got them. Oh, we got them. You may recall that Titanic Tuesday is named after a little something that happened years and years and years ago on right-wing radio in America's fifth smallest radio market, Beckley, West Virginia, in which one of the mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking followers of the weirdo right called the local right-wing blatherer and said, "Steve, how come you reckon it is that there is seashells in the rocks in West Virginia? We ain't nowhere near the beach." To which he, in his magnificent monotone, said, "Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates." Mm-hmm. Yeah. Titanic plates. Still no word on the movement of the Titanic doilies. No. So that's the focus of what we do on Tuesdays. And like I said, we've got lots and lots of examples. But this is also another primary Tuesday. Today being, as they all are, the make or break primary in Wisconsin for Bernie Sanders. Because if you read the for-profit media, you know that he's just hanging on by the barest thread, and hardly anyone is interested in his campaign. Yeah, I mean, if you were reading, say, the New York Times, for instance, who dummies up, even who won't even allow a story that's positive about Bernie Sanders to appear in its pages without the editors getting in there after having received a certain phone call and dummying it up and mucking it up and gumming it up until it's an anti-Sanders piece. Yeah. So polls will remain open in Wisconsin for those who have the requisite voter identification to be able to vote. There are an abundance of people who won't be voting in Wisconsin today because they have been disenfranchised by the law that was passed by the weirdo hardcore right-wing legislature of that state and signed into law by the weirdo hardcore right-wing weirdo governor Scott Walker, because voting you don't just want everybody doing that, because then the next thing you know, everybody will start feeling like they've got a stake in the government. Yeah. But yesterday, in Green Bay, there was a Bernie rally. Thousands upon thousands of people showed up for it. Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton has long since abandoned Wisconsin. Tonight, there will be no, she won't be attending any sort of party, victory or otherwise, in Wisconsin. She's got another fundraiser to go to for probably $1,000 a plate or more. Who knows? It's in Manhattan, so draw your own conclusions, right? But I wanted to share something with you. It's a little bit lengthy, but I think it's worthwhile to try to give it broader reach. Tim Robbins, the actor and activist, Tim Robbins, who first came to fame as the rookie pitcher in Bull Durham, and went on to star in The Shawshank Redemption and a number of other films. Tim Robbins opened for Bernie. He did the introductory remarks. And, of course, there has since been a firestorm started by his remarks, by people who make a profession out of being outraged. So I'm just a little curious here. What we're going to do is I'm going to run his remarks. And I want you, if you don't mind, I want you to spot the outrage. Although in the case of these hilarians and whatnot, it's more poutrage. But see if you can find the outrage. See if you can find the thing that made, David Brock or one of his little minions there at Blue Nation Review or wherever it was, the scream "Zomg!" and "Oh!" and "Oh! Ee! Oh! Ah! Mm!" And, you know, have one of those poutrage hissies. So listen up. This is from Green Bay, Wisconsin, yesterday. And even if you can't spot what caused the hilarian poutrage, I dare say it's still worth the effort. Check it out.
I'm here today to talk to our friends in the Democratic Party that feel Bernie in their hearts but are supporting Hillary with their pragmatic brains. These are not bad people. They fear the Republicans' radical and dangerous divisiveness as much as we do. We've all been fed a steady stream of simplistic propaganda that furthers the establishment's narrative, that Hillary is the presumptive nominee. This narrative is strong and persuasive. It's been promulgated for months by CNN and the New York Times and by, so many in the mainstream media. And if we were sheep, if we had gotten in line, there would be no problem now. The media and the ghosts of the DLC would have had their way, and government would carry on as it has carried on for the last 30 years. Establishment figures would get elected and reelected without any accountability for their bad decisions. Outsider candidates like Bernie Sanders would be marginalized and tolerated for a few primaries before falling in line with the Democratic Party structure. But the DNC and the Clintons have a big problem. Times have changed. Bernie is not Howard Dean. Bernie is not the obligatory progressive that will keep the left in line until the presumptive moderate nominee emerges. Bernie is not the Democratic Party insider that will bow down to the wishes of the elite of the party. We are done with that patriarchy. We are done with compromising our ideals. We are done with triangulation and fear-based politics. Now, I understand our friends' resistance to Bernie Sanders. They've been told repeatedly by the mainstream media that Bernie doesn't matter, that he's unelectable. Well, I'm here today to encourage our Democratic friends that want big change to happen, yet don't believe that it is possible. Our friends that believe that they are not worthy of dreaming big. Our friends that have surrendered their ideals to political pragmatism. That somehow believe that change will happen by choosing a candidate entirely entrenched in the dysfunctions of the past. There are moments in history where political pragmatism can lead to disaster, where a politician's future ambitions compromise their constituents' safety and security. These are the moments that define the man or the woman. Will that individual risk their political future because of their beliefs? Will they risk being marginalized as radicals and extremists? All of us that opposed the Iraq war were marginalized. We were called radicals. We were called extremists, terrorist supporters, for demanding evidence of weapons of mass destruction before we invaded. How radical was that? We were shouted down by the mainstream media. We were threatened. And some were intimidated into silence or compliance. Not Bernie. Bernie faced that same intimidation and remained steadfast. And those that did the politically expedient thing, that didn't ruffle feathers in an attempt to remain within the status quo, in an attempt to retain their positions of power, these people were rewarded. In the media, they were promoted. In politics, they were reelected. Some even received medals for getting it wrong. There were no apologies. There was no reckoning. There was no accountability. This was a defining moment for our country. The good news is that there are millions of thinking, feeling people in this country that, despite the massive propaganda that buoys up this failure, still hold on to the truth. And that truth is that the Iraq War is and was a bellwether. How you voted on this truly matters, because it winded us up in such a morass. This was a time in our history where political pragmatism led to a massive disaster. A disaster to our economy, a disaster to our world standing, a disaster in the lives lost in this manufactured war. We cannot afford to go down that road again. No, CNN, because you ignore Bernie doesn't make him go away. The New York Times can ignore on its front page Bernie's victories in Washington, Hawaii, and Alaska. We are no longer surprised. We get it. You want Bernie to go away. You want your anointed candidate to win. After the Southern primaries, you had called the election. And who's fooling who? Winning South Carolina in a Democratic primary is about as significant as winning Guam. No Democrat is going to win in South Carolina in the general election. Why do these victories have so much significance? Who is winning independents? Not Hillary. Who is winning the young vote that will do the hard work of canvassing and organizing and turning out the vote? Not Hillary. Who has won the last 6 out of the last 7 contests and clearly has momentum on their side? Perhaps the people in this country are voting this way because they are no longer willing to reward the failures of pragmatists and war-supporting Democrats. Perhaps the people of this country want leaders that can see clearly and make the right decision regardless of the way the wind is blowing. Perhaps the voters want a candidate with integrity. With this primary season, we are once again at a moment in history where political pragmatism can lead to disaster. This concept that Hillary is the presumptive nominee has rankled a critical mass of people. No, they are saying to this anointing. No, they do not want to be told in a free and open democracy who to vote for. No, they will not be intimidated by moderates in the Democratic Party who have been on the wrong side of history. To the Democratic Party, you take this movement of Bernie voters for granted at your own peril. These people have had every opportunity to embrace your presumptive nominee. They have received your constant stream of publicity, suggesting Hillary is their anointed. They have been given the message like everyone else, and they have overwhelmingly rejected this notion. No, they say, this is not my candidate. This is the candidate of a DLC Democratic Party that has brought us moderation when we needed bold action. This is the wing of the party that has brought us war and bank bailouts and mass incarceration. If Hillary had been on the right side of these issues, we would not be here today. We are here today because we want more out of our party. To start with, we would like an opposition party, a party that is truly for the working man and woman, a party that helps their constituents with actual policy, not just lip service every election cycle, that deals more with fear of the Republicans than with any actual change. We are the ones that marched against the Iraq war that Hillary voted for. We are the ones that have opposed for years the suicidal environmental future that politicians like Hillary have sanctioned with their support of the fossil fuel industry. We are the ones that marched against NAFTA. We are the ones that were outraged that the Democratic Party policies embraced a new strategy under Bill Clinton that demonized welfare mothers and supported legislation that disproportionately incarcerated African Americans in this war on drugs. We are the ones that opposed the tar sands pipeline that Hillary originally supported until she realized that it would be politically expedient for her to oppose. We are supporting a candidate that stood with us, that voted against the Iraq war, that is opposed to fracking, that voted against NAFTA, that is opposed to the death penalty. We are supporting a candidate that has throughout his career stood up for the working people, that has stood up for veterans, for the unemployed, for the poor, for abortion rights, for LGBT rights. We are supporting a candidate that has taken principled positions when others have compromised. We are supporting a candidate that has advocated for civil rights throughout his life, a man that marched with Martin Luther King, a man that advocates for those without a voice. We are supporting a candidate that has risked his political future time and again by remaining true to a strong moral commitment to peace and justice. And now the nation is starting to understand what the great people of Vermont understand, that have kept Bernie in office because he is a genuine voice, an honest voice, a principled man that stands his ground and votes his conscience. The good people of Vermont may not agree with him on all the issues, but they recognize Bernie as a man of integrity and consistently reelect him. What a radical concept, a politician that has a moral bottom line, a politician that is not swayed by polls or reckless ambition or inner party pragmatism. Could Bernie Sanders be leading us into a new paradigm? A paradigm where one's previous actions actually are relevant to one's current campaign. A time where accountability actually matters, where politicians are held responsible for their bad policy decisions. A time where the expedient and pragmatic within the political and media establishment are no longer rewarded for their compliance and subservience to corporate interests and party politics. We are in a new time. And you, here in this hall, on this day in Wisconsin, are leading us into a new future. You realize how important this election is. You are the visionaries that realize that the time is now. Now is the time for the truth. Now is the time for tolerance. Now is the time for love. Now is the time for unbridled idealism. Now is the time to dream big. The time to believe that we can actually accomplish great things beyond the accepted realm of possibility. Now is the time to elect a leader that will lead us into a future of prosperity, peace, and real progressive change. Now is the time for Bernie Sanders.
Yeah. Now you probably understand why I felt like it might be valuable to run that clip. Have you got it yet? No. Okay. Well, no, that's an okay, but no. Steve said, I know. It was his tone. And of course it was his tone. But that wasn't the specific thing. The tone is an overall thing. No. Specifically, it was two things. It was his use of the word sheep. That got him going real good. That cranked up the hilarion wambulance to 11. But then they got really pissed off when Tim Robbins said something that was obviously true. That a Democrat winning a primary in South Carolina is about as meaningful as a Democrat winning Guam. In other words, because it's not going to have any impact on that candidate's ability to win the general election. Oh, yes, absolutely, Carol Baker. Using the word patriarchy pissed him right the hell off. I don't know what it's like to be a diehard hilarian. Because I can't imagine being one. You know, for more than 12 years, we've been carrying on a progressive conversation here. And, you know, had Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton run unopposed in the Democratic primaries, you know, come May the 10th, I misspoke last night, it's May the 10th, not May the 12th. When May the 10th rolled around here in West Virginia, I would have wandered on down to the polls. And I might have felt motivated. Well, no might about it. I would have been motivated to go and try to get the hell rid of one of the greatest embarrassments ever to disgrace. And there's been a lot of embarrassments to do the disgracing. But to dislodge one of the greatest embarrassments ever to disgrace the West Virginia State House in the form of a pettifog and asshat by the name of Thomas Fast, who publicly says things like Barack Obama is sending out secret Muslim hand signs. I would have had some motivation to go and do that. And along the way, I would have just sort of, yeah, okay, Hillary. Which is how I'll feel in November if she's the nominee. Yeah, okay. because as a progressive person, there's nothing there to get excited about. Let's be fair. I did notice the other day, yesterday, that after declaring never ever about a $15 minimum wage, she was invited in New York to take part in an event celebrating that state's $15 minimum wage. Because she hit that evolve button again. She's evolved on the $15. Well, I mean, she's really happy there's going to be a $15 minimum wage in New York, but she has yet to call for a $15 minimum wage nationally. So all y'all who voted for her down in the Confederacy, well, you can just suck it up, Buttercup. You ain't get no $15 minimum wage. But if New York wants to do it, that's cool. But there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of reality in what Tim Robbins said. And I got to thinking about it after I'd watched this. I'm voting for Bernie. But I'm voting with a huge demographic majority of Americans. I'm voting for Bernie, but I'm voting with the millennials. Because I too was once young. I don't feel particularly old now. But I will damn sure not allow myself to be counted in among a bunch of people who say, I got mine, sonny. Fuck you. To the 30-somethings and the 20-somethings and the first-time voters. I'm voting for Bernie, but I'm voting with them. Because, you see, if Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton gets us in another war, Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton's generation ain't gonna fight it. That generation that's voting for Bernie are the ones who are going to be called upon to fight it, whether it be just or unjust, wise or unwise. Some of them will go off to fight it, and some of them will come home in boxes. So I'm voting for Bernie, but I'm voting with them. I'm voting with them because I think they have an absolutely perfected right to say that they don't want to participate in this rigged game, that they want a new game, that they don't want it to be a game at all, that they want it to be life, that they want it to be reality, that they, all those things Tim Robbins was talking about. In the chat room, Man Cave says, hey, Bob, we already had our war. Exactly. But no, just to backtrack for a minute, the claim was that somehow Tim Robbins had dissed the black community by saying that South Carolina's Democratic votes had no particular meaning. Which is not what he said. There was no reference to race whatsoever, but Hillary has a team of people who are well-schooled in seeing things that don't exist, in hearing things that haven't been said. Hell, I'm as far as I know, I'm still just about the only lifelong Southerner who's doing progressive radio. And look, it's a fact. The only thing that front-loading the southern states in the primary process did was create a false narrative that the establishment candidate was unstoppable. But I'll say what Tim Robbins didn't. Hillary's success in Southern Democratic primaries says a hell of a lot more about the privilege of the white folks who remain Democrats in the South and white, black, and every other permutation. It speaks to the lack or the low education in that region, the low educational standards. Because when you get out into wider America, black, white, Asian, indigenous, Latino, those voters go much more broadly to Bernie than they did in the South. And it's just a fact. True. Gerald says, yeah, not only Southern doing progressive radio, but in West Virginia, of all places. Yeah, I'm feeling a little bit like the last dodo. Yep, I'm the last dodo. But I'm very, very earnest about this. I'm tired of being told that I am, and I got told this again today, starry-eyed for wanting to see Bernie Sanders be the candidate who runs against whatever monstrosity the Republican Party throws up. And I do mean throws up. I'm starry-eyed. When all in the world I want is for the next generation coming up, my kids, my grandkids, to have an America that had at least, that would afford them at least a fighting chance at success. You know, the America that a generation beyond my parents helped build with the assistance of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. I was told today to, well, go on and vote for Bernie. It's your privilege. No, sunshine. That's not a privilege. It's a fucking right. It is a right. But that's the kind of talk you get out of the out of the rabid hilarians these days that voting for Bernie is a privilege thing. The only privilege involved in that vote is my privilege of standing alongside people who will be here long after my ass is gone on. Wheresoever the candle flame goeth when it bloweth out. The privilege of being on the right side of history. The privilege of maintaining my principles and not compromising them in a primary. You see, that's the thing that kind of blows my mind. I've had to go through and weed out a lot of people from my Facebook feed. And they're not people that I went out and friended up. They're people who requested me to confirm them as friends on Facebook. Because for years now, you know, on my Facebook feed, I'm the same as I am here. And the same as I am in my everyday world. I am a progressive, liberal American. And I am unapologetically so. And apparently the Facebook algorithms told them that they needed to... You get the idea. But with this primary season, suddenly, a lot of progressive values have gone, whoop, goodbye. And disappeared into a dense and miasmic fog of political pragmatism. By the way, I had a note from our buddy Steve in New York earlier, going back to something I said last night. Subject line just said, thank you, and I opened it and had no idea what it was about. And Steve said, I just heard your reasons for voting for Hillary in November. You know, if that's the choice I'm left with versus Kasich or versus Cruz or versus T. Rump or Bishop Willard Romney or Eddie Munster Ryan or, you know, any of that cadre of weirdos. You know, why don't they just get it the fuck over with and nominate Sarah fucking Palin? I mean, that's where they're headed, to one degree or another. But anyway, Steve said, I just heard your reasons for voting for Hillary, if you have to, in November. Bob, I can't stand her on either a personal or a political level. I've gotten to the point with my Obamacare because it's almost simply unaffordable that I'm going to drop it. However, Steve says, I couldn't forgive myself if you and millions of other families lost their health care because of a Trump presidency. You've articulated why I should do the same. And I thank you for that, Steve. If you've ever seen the classic Masterpiece Theater PBS series I, Claudius, or as I like to say it, I, Clavdivs, kind of hard to carve a curve with stone tools, so I, Claudius looks like I, Clavdivs. You may recall a young Nero toward the end of the series saying, fire is such a lovely thing. Yeah. Ain't it? And there are those out there who are saying, you know, bring, you know, go ahead and if Trump's the nominee, vote for Trump and let the chips fall where they may and bring on the revolution. I don't think that's a reflection of reality. Because this country does not do revolutions. Bernie using the word revolution is not talking about, you know, Chinese atonal music and gunfire in the streets. I mean, hell, we've already got the gunfire in the streets part, don't we? He's talking about a political revolution the same way Republicans talk about the Reagan revolution, and they were successful. They completely warped everything we understood about America. They transformed America from a place where one person could work a job and feed a family to a place where both people working multiple jobs can't feed a family. That's the kind of revolution Bernie's talking about, you know, political in nature, and changing the way we think about things. It's a pendulum shift. By the way, Steve asks, what's wrong with being starry-eyed? Who was it who said, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country? Or, first, I believe that this nation should commit itself to achieving the goal before this decade is out of landing a man on the moon and returning him safely to the earth. I'll take starry-eyed, says Steve. That's what leaders inspire. But I think having a working understanding of what it means when we say that we're tired of the gaga Democrats, go along, get along Democrats, that we want real systemic change, we got to understand what that means. I won't blame the millennials if they're not excited about a Clinton campaign. I ran across a story earlier today from about something that Barney Frank said. Barney Frank is a surrogate and a longtime pal of the Clintons. He said, the fact is, if you're seriously committed to a set of public policy goals, then you're voting all the time, and you also, and I think this is part of it, you have people who don't understand, frankly, the nature of the American political system. He said, that's why we have gridlock. I think what you have is, frankly, people that don't understand that, and it is a case of people blaming a system when the system is simply the accumulation of their own behavior. People are reluctant to blame themselves. People like to find somebody else to blame. So now they're saying, see, Sanders pointed out it's the system's fault. And I think that's unfortunate. It's unfortunate that Bernie Sanders is saying that the system's rigged. And you know what? If the system's working for you, like it's working for Barney Frank, it is a shame. It is unfortunate. Because that might spoil your fun. But Barney Frank couldn't survive for a goddamned week on a minimum wage salary. What thin oxygen? What the thin oxygen crowd, people like Barney Frank, don't understand is that the people who are out there surviving on minimum wage, the people out there working two and three jobs, are about the toughest people that this country has. They've got guts and they've got determination. And they won't quit, even though the deck is stacked against them. He did some fancy footwork and some excuse making. He said, I wish some people had been prosecuted for the Wall Street disaster. But the Secretary of State doesn't indict people. That's President Obama. Nah, Barney, no. The president has never yet indicted a single crook. It's the Department of Justice. But anyway, the health care bill, President Obama, his view on the inadequacy of financial reform is on President Obama. Yeah, but see, that's real cute, except for the fact that Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton repeatedly tried to smear Senator Sanders as having dared criticize President Obama. After which, a couple of weeks ago, Bill Clinton described the Obama presidency as the awful legacy of the last 8 years. Writing off the millions upon millions upon millions of people who support Senator Sanders' candidacy, Barney Frank said, "You have people who, I believe, do not understand how hard it is to make change, the importance of not just being idealistic, but being sensibly pragmatic about it and keep your ideals." And Sanders is getting their support. Somebody needs a refresher in how to win friends and influence, whatever, Dale Carnegie. How to win friends and influence people. But out of all the palaver that Barney Frank offered, this was the part that lit me up. If you look at the final election polls, Sanders does better than Clinton. He's talking about the polls that show a broader base of people. Giving a presidential victory to Bernie Sanders than to Hillary Clinton over Trump or Cruz. Here's the interesting part, though. In the polls right now, Hillary Clinton loses to John Kasich, where Bernie Sanders beats him. If you look at the final election polls, Sanders does better than Clinton. There's a very simple reason for that. All of the Clinton people asked say they'll vote for Sanders. Because of this kind of lack of information and I think misunderstanding of how you really get change done in America, a large chunk, a third I saw recently quoted, say they won't vote for Clinton. That's why he does better now. Only that doesn't make sense where Kasich is concerned. And then there's this. See, somebody handed Bernie some talking points. Bernie didn't read the actual survey. Because the same survey he's citing, in that very same survey, and we talked about this is the same survey that was cited by Charles Blow in his column in the New York Times. Yeah, there are people who say, and apparently a large chunk of them who say, if Hillary's the nominee, I just can't vote for her. But the number of Clinton supporters who say they just can't support Bernie is even larger. So you know, you millennials and you ass into the boomers like me, and you boomers, and people older than the boomers who support Bernie. Well, you're just not pragmatic. The funny thing is, I'm brutally pragmatic. I'm really, really painfully pragmatic. Because I understand that what we are in is something called collapse of empire. So, no, not much is going to happen if the Congress remains the same. However, if Bernie can get the nomination, and if he can become the president of the United States, he can lead this political revolution and maybe flip the Congress in November 2018. And that's the only hope of getting anything done. Otherwise, it's just stasis. And a long, slow slide to ignominy. Here's something interesting. I have here a copy of a letter from Aldous Huxley to George Orwell. It is a little-known fact that Aldous Huxley was George Orwell's French teacher at Eton College. Aldous Huxley wrote a letter to George Orwell about his new book, 1984. It was the 21st of October, 1949. I think you'll see what I'm getting at. It was very kind of you to tell your publishers to send me a copy of your book. It arrived as I was in the midst of a piece of work that required much reading and consulting of references, and since poor sight makes it necessary for me to ration my reading, I had to wait a long time before being able to embark on 1984. Agreeing with all that the critics have written of it, I need not tell you yet once more how fine and how profoundly important the book is. May I speak instead of the thing with which the book deals, the ultimate revolution? The first hints of a philosophy of the ultimate revolution, the revolution which lies beyond politics and economics and which aims at total subversion of the individual's psychology and physiology, are to be found in the Marquis de Sade, who regarded himself as the continuator, the consummator of Robespierre and Babeuf. The philosophy of the ruling minority in 1984 is a sadism which has been carried to its logical conclusion by going beyond sex and denying it. Whether in actual fact the policy of the boot on the face can go on indefinitely seems doubtful. My own belief is that the ruling oligarchy will find less arduous and wasteful ways of governing and of satisfying its lust for power, and these ways will resemble those which I described in Brave New World. I've had occasion recently to look into the history of animal magnetism and hypnotism, and have been greatly struck by the way in which for 150 years the world has refused to take serious cognizance of the discoveries of Mesmer, Braid, Estelle, and the rest. Just wait. Partly because of the prevailing materialism and partly because of prevailing respectability, 19th century philosophers and men of science were not willing to investigate the odder facts of psychology for practical men, such as politicians, soldiers, and policemen, to apply in the field of government. Thanks to the voluntary ignorance of our fathers, the advent of the ultimate revolution was delayed for five or six generations. Another lucky accident was Freud's inability to hypnotize successfully and his consequent disparagement of hypnotism. This delayed the general application of hypnotism to psychiatry for at least 40 years, but now psychoanalysis is being combined with hypnosis, and hypnosis has been made easy and indefinitely extensible through the use of barbiturates, which induce a hypnoid and suggestible state in even the most recalcitrant subjects. Within, and here's the nut of it, within the next generation, I believe that the world's rulers will discover that infant conditioning and narco-hypnosis are more efficient as instruments of government than clubs and prisons, and that the lust for power can be just as completely satisfied by suggesting people into loving their servitude as by flogging and kicking them into obedience. In other words, I feel that the nightmare of 1984 is destined to modulate into the nightmare of a world having more resemblance to that which I imagined in Brave New World. The change will be brought about as a result of a felt need for increased efficiency. How often do we talk about productivity in the workforce, which means working harder for less money? Meanwhile, of course, there may be a large-scale biological and atomic war, in which case we shall have nightmares of other and scarcely imaginable kinds. Thank you once again for the book. Yours sincerely, Aldous Huxley. And even before he had written that, Aldous Huxley, it had been shown, before and after. Its empirical truth was proven. And oddly enough, as is so often the case, one of the testing laboratories was Appalachia. In the early 20th century in Appalachia, flogging and kicking people into obedience was the order of the day, as were clubs and prisons. When people dared to step out of line and challenge the power of corporations, who were joined at the hip to the power of the state. That eventually went away. But in post-Reagan America, you don't have to do the clubs and prisons flogging and kicking anymore. What you do is you give those people who could potentially become malcontents televisions. Or, for a while, you make sure that they can buy new tanning bed bulbs every year, or a new four-wheeler every year, or a new car every five, new truck. And you keep the revolution at bay. Then a little bit later, the coal company that did all those things, we're talking about coal companies here, the coal company that did all those things simply goes bankrupt and takes back everything that it had given. And by then, the narco-hypnoids have done their job, and the people won't get out of line even when they're getting screwed all the way down to the ground. Again, this letter was written in October of 1949. Television was in its infancy. Well, television's all grown up now, isn't it, Sunshine? Of course it is. Of course it is. And millions of people, millions of people, sit in hypnotized amazement day in and day out. I saw a clip earlier today of some cartoon series that Ferg was watching, in which a guy was being presented a Medal of Freedom by, you know, it was an animated series. Some guy was being presented a Medal of Freedom by President Obama. But apparently he had eaten something bad and proceeded to vomit all over President Obama. I'm sorry, I know it's the dinner hour some places. Sorry, Scott. Sorry, Linda. And so there was an extended scene of animated vomiting. And a little bit later, a guy walks on from off, you know, off screen and says, "I want to present you with this Fox News Man of the Year Award for vomiting on President Obama." And the guy says, "Well, that just beats the hell out of some shitty old Presidential Medal of Freedom. Gimme." Yeah. Kind of telling, really. Yeah, oh, I need to announce something. I had a note earlier from Harold, the chairman and CEO of the Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. You know, I told you we had a $300 fundraising goal this evening. Well, Harold is trying to make it easier and more interesting, courtesy of the Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. He says, "Let's round up the donations by $10 up to $200. Courtesy of the Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society." So, up to $200 worth, every contribution gets rounded up by 10 bucks. Your 10 becomes 20, your 20, 30, your 30, 40. Your 5 becomes 15. And that way we can clear the deficit and hopefully deal with some first of the month bill paying. So thank you very kindly to Harold and the Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. Yes, indeed. For the $10 Roundup Challenge. Operators are standing by. No, they're not. It's PayPal or the U.S. Mail. If you want to participate via the U.S. Mail, send me a note and I'll tick off another 10 bucks. But as it stands, there's $200 worth of rounding up out there to go around. Okay? Thanks a bunch, Harold. Thank you very, very, very kindly. And a note coming in from GK. Subject line, WTF Barney et al. The, as you say, thin air crowd truly have no fucking idea what they're talking of. People in the community as Frank sure talk, the same community as Frank sure talk a good game on two fronts. It's easy for someone of means and who is of the LGBT community to get around the discrimination heaped upon those who are not. Moreover, my uncle used to tell me this, and it has always stuck with me. He would say, in reference to the thin air crowd, not his choice of words, but I got his meaning, he'd say, "A hard day's work and a cold shower would kill them bastards." Those were his words exactly. I miss you, Uncle Pete. Yeah, I think I'm going to hang on to that one. A hard day's work and a cold shower would kill them bastards. Ain't it the truth? Hey, thanks very kindly, Carl. Thanks a bunch. Thanks to the Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. Well, we just took a bite out of the fundraising goal to the tune of $15. And that leaves us $285 to go. Thanks, Carl. Thanks very, very much. See, these little challenges can be quite the incentive. All right, then. By the way, with the program being somewhat shortened each evening, I should be careful about over-filibobstering. So the phone lines are open if you want to join in, engage in conversation. You know how we do all this. Of course, the Stress Line, named for Mr. Stress Miller. Now some of you guys have me calling him Dr. Stress. Mr. Stress Miller is 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. The other line is 304-574. Now, that's 2 days in a row that's happened to me. You know, London. I think I need a vacation. Bizarre. And then Skype to Skype. Is, of course, Bob Kincaid Horn. BobKincaidHorn. Why, looky there. I'll bet you that's Jim down in Louisiana, Stan. What's happening, Jim?
Well?
Yeah, there you are.
Oh, okay, we're on. Okay. You're doing a fantastic show again. I mean, you're just mind-blowing.
Well, thank you. Thank you very kindly.
I thought you were going to do a longer break, but that's cool. I wrote some things down. I totally concur with you and what Tim Robbins was saying. I caught that on last night, I think, after I talked to you. And he's 1,000% right. You know, you can add all the zeros you want, but, you know, there's a line from a song, "Don't Give Up." I forget, is that Peter Gabriel or something? But,
yeah.
You know, the millennials, and plus, I would urge the non-millennials who are leaning towards HRC.
You there? Jim? Hold on. Hey, Jim, stand by a second. For some reason or another, the Bluetooth kicked. Dial me right back, Jim. Wait. Gotcha. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, that was weird. Go right ahead.
I mean, that Tim Robbins, it's weird. I saw that last night. I think it was after your show or your second show. I really do appreciate you doing the Malloy show afterwards. You know, it's really great. It's just so blatantly obvious to me, you know. Maybe it's because, you know, I have no doubt it's my DNA and my placement and reality that I see this, but why other people can't, and especially, I mean, and I haven't really talked to a lot of Hilly bots or Hilly people on the internet or elsewhere, but people are just, you know, you people.
you people.
There, let me point my crooked finger at you. I mean, Bernie's just, he's got a new energy. And I've noticed also they have a big attack. They're going back to stuff, and they're throwing out false stuff, which is, I understand why they do that, I think, from a technical Machiavellian standpoint. Because if you really want to be sincere and look at it, that wastes your time in looking at it. Then you find out it's bullshit anyway. Whereas, now Bernie's kind of like, Hillary's kind of like some sort of pop song, which is just full of bullshit magic, whereas to me, Bernie's kind of like John Lennon's Just Give Me Some Truth. Yeah, that song.
Yeah, it's you'd say John Lennon versus the Archies.
Yeah, exactly, man. I mean, that was my when I remember when I was growing up decades ago. And I mean, the great thing about you is you bring that into. You brought that in yesterday when you brought up. I think it was yesterday's first time you actually brought up that you're not voting for. Me or my generation, you're voting for the next generation because you're right. I mean, you're too old than you. We're gone in 25 years if something doesn't strike us down anyway. But if we have a good, halfway decent life, we can make it 25 years. That's called a good life. Not considering all the trauma and bullshit we have to go through, just to get our fair share. You know,
yeah.
Decided by politicians, corporate politicians from both sides. Whereas Bernie's offering a brave new world to touch on your Aldous Huxley thing. Agreed?
There's a really creepy aspect to both 1984 and A Brave New World. You know, in a Brave New World, everybody's just somed out of their minds. And they just sort of shamble through their existence. I don't know that there's a literary metaphor for where we want to go with Bernie. But I know most of the people who support him have a vision of it. And you know, it's not all. It's not all sunshine and rainbows and unicorn farts. It's still hard work, but it's a fighting fucking chance, Jim.
Exactly. You're working for yourself as opposed to the corporation, which is going to fuck you over in the end anyway with your 401k, which your supposed investments, you don't even know what the fuck you're investing in. Yeah, you know, basically, when I was working for a corporation, is this is high risk, this is medium risk, this is low risk, and I had like in the medium or whatever, and I don't think I ever made a penny. I think some other corporation running it. Surprise, surprise! Always it wasn't a great deal of money, but if you have a couple of 100,000 employees or a million employees, $5 here, $5 there, loss. And ends up being $5 million. Let's say it's a million exactly. $5 million. It's every fucking penny thereafter. You know? What's the line? We want the world and we want it now, you know?
They want it all.
Yeah. And then they want to bitch at you for not saving. Or not saving wise. According to them, they'd be not saving wisely. Why didn't you get a financial counselor? Is I'm working for your fucking company, and you know, and I remember they would try out, and it would sound great, but I remember like one time the thing was they were offering like additional health care. You can put money aside in case you get sick.
Oh, a health care savings account, that dodge.
Yeah, that's fucking bullshit. I said, well, what happens if I don't use it? Well, then it's lost. Where the fuck is that? That makes no fucking sense at all. I'm sorry, I'm using a lot of fortune.
But it's coming out before taxes, so you'll never know you lost it in the first place.
What's that?
It's coming out before taxes, so it's not like you're going to miss it. See, that's how that works.
Yeah. You've got every... And you know, I seem to know a little bit. I'm fairly intelligent on certain levels, but, like, finances isn't exactly one. And that takes a whole new... I mean, if you were to get involved in... I mean, I'm sure you know a fair amount, but it would take you a whole long while to get into it, you know, to really...
Well, no. There's an easy way to get at this.
What's that?
There's an easy way to get at this, Jim. How long would a minimum wage worker have to work to make the same amount of money that Hillary Clinton made giving one speech for 1 hour to Goldman Sachs?
His entire life, probably, or close to it.
No, I don't think so. No. Let's see here. Okay.
25 years, $250,000.
All right, I got my Gazetta machine up here. So 675 Gazetta, 3 Gazetta is $225,000. So 225 and here, let's, no, wait. No, let's, that $15 minimum wage that she said never ever about. Let's Gazetta $15 an hour into that $225,000 just to be charitable. A 15, unless I somehow misused my calculator, my Gazetta machine, my ciphering box, a $15 an hour wage earner would have to work 15,000 hours to make the same amount of money that Hillary Clinton made giving one speech to Goldman Sachs for 1 hour.
15,000, that's 7.5 years. I'm just guessing off the top of my head.
Well, let's see.
50 weeks times 40 is 2,000. 2,000.
That's 375 weeks. That's 7.211 53846 years. So one of those people making the wage that Hillary Clinton has said, I mean, and let's remember, I mentioned that $15 minimum wage. That's a $15 minimum wage in New York years from now, when the $15 will be the equal of making $11 now. So, but no, a person making $15 per hour would have to work for 7 years, 40 hours a week, 52 weeks a year to make what Hillary Clinton made in 1 hour talking to Goldman Sachs.
Well, there's David Byrne of the Talking Head so aptly sang, same as it ever was. Same as it ever was. Yeah, they're a great group, man. But, yeah, it's just mind-boggling to me that, to me, Hillary, HRC, all small letters, is what I use in my tweets. I refuse to capitalize on her letters. But,
power to the people, man!
What's that?
Nothing. I was being a smart ass. Go ahead.
Oh, what'd you say?
I said, power to the people, no capital letters.
Yeah.
Or power to E.E. Cummings or something.
I'm really sure. It's kind of, actually, it's kind of Orwellian going back to 1984. If I remember, that they wouldn't all punctuation or whatever kind of lost in the book. Or do you remember that part of it?
I don't remember. I don't.
Okay, well, I think I'm gonna let you go. Let me see. Yeah, I'm gonna let you go. If somebody else jump in, I've had a few beers and.
A few beers. 6:30. down on the bayou. It sounds nice, Jim. It sounds nice.
Same as it ever was. Same as it ever was. I'm going to disconnect on that.
All right. Talk to you later, Jim. See ya. Bye now. Our buddy Jim down in Louisiana, Stan. That was not something I had planned. I had never bothered to calculate that. Boy, I sure hope. I sure hope Bernie doesn't. I don't know. You reckon there's somebody at Bernie headquarters who has a ciphering box too? Because that's breathtaking. You cannot argue with any degree of credibility that you have anything in common with working America when it takes working America. And remember, that's at $15 an hour. There's millions and millions and millions of working Americans who don't get half that. So that means they'd have to work for 14.4 years at $7.50 an hour. You know, probably around 10 at $9 an hour, I'm guessing. But, I mean, isn't that a little, and that, you know, that's not wealth envy. That's not that at all. It is simply a matter of class and privilege. And millions of those Americans who are earning those shitty wages went to the Democratic primaries in the Confederacy and voted for it. If you can sort that out, I can't. But I would appreciate a little help along the way. So all three means of communication with the program are open to you. 304-574-8178. Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. And, of course, the stress line, 304-663-4676. Oh, well, okay, there's an upside. Okay, over there near Smoot, Ron is reminding me. But, Bob, if they made that money over 10 to 12 years, they would pay less in taxes than if they'd earned it all in the same hour. See, I mean, we all have our crosses to bear. I've had a couple of questions here. One came from the Angry Indian. The other came earlier from our buddy Robert up near Morgantown. And they both have to do with the Panama Papers. Have you mentioned it yet? Well, I have mentioned it. I mentioned it yesterday. I have not dealt with it in any detail, however, because so far there's not a lot to get your hands on. This isn't like WikiLeaks where if you wanted to, you could just go and start, you know, digging around. And it's also orders of magnitude bigger document dump. But even from the initial information that we're getting, this looks like, it is something huge. I started seeing the first I saw of it had was over the weekend, and then of course by yesterday we had found out that There were just file cabinets full of shell corporations that were owned by, say, corrupt Russian oligarchs that Vladimir Putin was very careful not to have his fingerprints on, but becomes rather an inescapable reality. We found out that the World Soccer Organization, which is crooked as a dog's hind leg, was up to its eyeballs. Iceland, who actually punished the banksters, well, they now have a former prime minister. Turned out he had himself a little bit of dodgy operating, a little dodgy action going on with some shell corporations. In the chat room, Laborman says, Bob, nothing new there. Rich fucks scamming and robbing. I mean, it's what they do. Let's see, Bashar al-Assad, his name showed up. So far, though, no direct mention of any of America's corrupt political class. Why? Well, see, my thinking on that is that they don't need them. American politicians don't need offshore shell corporations because, see, other countries have corruption laws that have to be circumvented. Here in Merca, the greatest country in the world on earth, now, today, forever, under God, indivisible, in the universe. Amen. We just take corruption for granted. We've got Citizens United. Fuck a bunch of Panama Papers. Right? I mean, that's the bottom line, isn't it? Politicians can wheel and deal and enrich themselves till they turn blue in the face. I mean, we've got a Sherman Antitrust Act that we don't enforce anymore. But Angry provided me with something here you might find interesting. From a diary over at Daily Kos, the person writes, concerning the Panama Papers scandal, let's start putting two and two together. One, Hillary Clinton lobbied for the Panama-United States Trade Promotion Agreement and was warned it would make money laundering and tax evasion easier for rich folks and bad guys. Two, Deutsche Bank is up to its eyeballs in this shit. Three, after resigning as Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton personally made $485,000 speaking to, don't hold your breath, you know where I'm going with this, Deutsche Bank. No nuance, it's really simple. Hillary Clinton did Deutsche Bank a big lucrative solid, and they returned the favor when it was legally permissible. Oh, ain't that true? Little Gray in the chat room says, hey, we may not enforce the Sherman Antitrust Act anymore, but we damned well do enforce Taft-Hartley. Yeah, can't have no workers getting uppity. Well. Might be time to do a little further reading on that. The Panama-United States Trade Promotion Agreement. Was she really warned that it would make money laundering and tax evasion easier for rich folks and bad guys? Rather interesting. On the other hand, guess who guess who consistently opposed the Panama deal? That's right. Bernie Sanders. James writes with an email saying, subject line, Panama Papers, Putin will be reelected. Yep. Tim from LA says, with the revelations of the Panama Papers, if Hillary's name is mentioned, do you think that people would be shocked and support Bernie? Personally, I don't think so. Your thoughts? I think you're right, Tim. I'm sure that if she was connected, and you know, there's no direct connection yet. That's just, you know, sort of dot connecting about Deutsche Bank and the Panama, right? But if her name showed up in the middle of it in bold face, her partisans would merely explain that it was a filthy right-wing smear, and even if it wasn't, it was pragmatically progressive for her to advocate for passage of the promotion of the Panama trade partnership bullshit, whatever. That's not the link, GK. The Independent in the UK, with a story titled from its voices section, "The Panama Papers could hand Bernie Sanders the keys to the White House." Although there have been no major American casualties over the leak at this stage, all of the presidential candidates will be questioned about the scandal, and nobody is going to be under more pressure than Hillary Clinton. For some Americans, she is the embodiment of a global elite, while Bernie Sanders is its antithesis. And there's the reference. It's been revealed Clinton pushed through the Panama Free Trade Deal at the same time that Sanders vocally opposed it, citing research warning that it would strictly limit the government's ability to clamp down on questionable or even illegal activity. Even if the Clintons remain unmentioned in future tax bombshells, Sanders can continue to exploit the narrative that Clinton is part of the demographic responsible and has assisted in flagrant abuses of the system through trade deals. And again, I don't think anybody knows. I don't think anybody knows everything that's in them. An anonymous leaker gave the cache of documents to the Süddeutsche Zeitung, the South German newspaper. And they, in turn, partnered with the International Consortium of Investigative Journalism and started analyzing the data. And this stuff is going to drip, 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 drip for a long time. Who knows what could be out there by October? Right. Oh, and time for more thanks. We are now down to under $200 to go to catch up with fundraising. Thank you to Randy. And thank you very kindly to Keith. So let's see. I think we're under. $195 to go. Thanks to the additions brought about by the Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. Remember, every contribution gets $10 added to it. So, yeah, we are at $195 to go. It would be nice if, with a volume of data as high as what the Panama Papers are, it would be nice if people could get, if a broader spectrum of people could get a look at it. But my God, the size of it is astonishing. It is, the Panama Papers are 2.6 terabytes of data. You can see where that might take some going through. And the thing is, it goes, the Panama Papers go all the way from the 1970s to the present. There's no telling who all or what all is in there. The Angry Indian telling me that McClatchy, the only U.S. news organization with access to the papers, points even more fingers. Over on Reddit, four names are being mentioned in answer to the question, are any of the names in the Panama Papers linked with the Clinton Foundation? They are refiling their taxes for not reporting foreign donations accurately for at least 3 years. So far, we have four names. Bidzina, Ivanishvili, Prince Salman, Sultan al-Nayan, and Petro Poroshenko. My guess is if there are any direct connections, they will be through the Clinton Foundation. Simply because of the number of foreign swells, hobnobs, and despots with whom they have swanned and soireed. As the old saying goes, watch this space. It's probably going to get a little hot for a few billionaires. But that's what the lawyers are for. Now, what would be interesting, because I like background stuff, what is the history of that Panama trade deal? How did it come to be? Who advocated for its passage? Because, of course, and one wonders, would the TPP have equally dodgy implications? I don't know. But do let's remember, going all the way back to the Reagan administration, and perhaps further, well, certainly further. I mean, there's a reason we dug the Panama Canal where we dug it, and it wasn't entirely geographical. Originally, the thought was to go through Nicaragua. But remember the Reagan administration? Remember the Iran-Contras? Remember Manuel Noriega, who was a CIA asset before the Bush family turned on him for being a brutal dictator and drug runner? Yeah. I mean, how many leaky freighters are plying the waters of the world, the oceans and seas, flying a flag of Panamanian registry? Because there's almost no, it's almost meaningless. No worker protections, no regulation, no oversight. Early exit polling, by the way, this is encouraging. Early exit polling showing that Bernie is leading in Wisconsin 55% to 42%. If you're in Wisconsin, vote. If you've already voted, help somebody else to go and vote. I'm sure we'll all be watching that unfold. Again, the polls will close in Wisconsin at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, just as I'm firing up the Malloy program for this evening. So we'll try to keep a running tally or a handle. Right, who am I kidding? Every major news organization. Well, I don't know. You know, it's not going to be a positive. If it's not a positive for Hillary, they may not announce their projected winner at 9:00:00:01. They do that with Hillary. Will they do it with Bernie? I don't know. Exit polling shows Senator Sanders is up 92% to 8%, but that's with just one precinct reporting, and it's really too close to call. Nah, I'm just being a smart aleck, right? Yeah. Am I? Eh. So I'm going to take about an hour or so and do a little more prep work, and before the Malloy broadcast, I always test everything again. Like I said, we'll have two channels of audio tonight. I thought it was going to some going across, but it didn't. I hope you'll join me in the conversation. I'm looking forward to it again, and I hope the Malloys are having a blast. Prefer at the beach. What's that Jimmy Buffett lyric? Vacantly occupied, sat on the beach till my body got fried. Yeah, yeah, devoutly to be wished. Hollowed out coconut shell with something toxically alcoholic in it. And fruit punch. Little umbrella in the top, maybe a plastic pirate sword through a maraschino cherry and a wedge of orange. Mm-hmm. Well, I did, yes, Tim from L.A. I did get fried. Those photographs are still out there of me looking like Captain Pike after 3 hours in the sun on Grand Turk. It's a different kind of sun down there. Meanwhile, a note from GK, subject line, papers? What papers? Can't help but wonder if it's only the tip of the iceberg. Seems like chickens may be coming home to roost. People in Panama obviously remember our form of capitalism and democracy. Oh, you mean the kind that we enforce at the muzzle of a gun? Mm-hmm. Right. All right, everybody. Remember, there are, let's see. Thank you to Carl and Keith and Randy, there are 17 more secret open carry Happy Trails Roundup Society opportunities available. 17 more. So your contribution gets rounded up by $10, and that would hopefully get us out of the hole. Yeah. It's there for you. Well, either PayPal or let me know you want to do it by mail. Bill with a note. Panama Free Trade Agreement announced on October 31st, 2012. Who was Secretary of State at that time? Who actively promoted it? Yeah. God, it was just going to be a brave new world of free trade, wasn't it? Oh, wait, there's that title again, Brave New World. You'll have that, I guess. Yeah, it'll do fine, Gerald. Gerald says, really, hollowed-out coconut shell? Really, Bob? How about a PBR and a taco instead? Works fine by me, especially the real kind. The real kind of taco. There's only one PBR. PBR can be quite awesome in its proper environment. All right, everybody, thanks so much. Thanks so much for joining in the conversation. Another 2 hours tomorrow night, and hey, an hour from now, another 2 hours over at the Molloy program. I'll be hopping into the Molloy chat room shortly before airtime, and hey, we'll have a dandy fine time. Okie dokie, okie dokie. Talk to you soon. Enjoy the hour off. Later, y'all.